Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
This podcast is sponsored by Petplan, who are the UK's number one pet insurer. I've always used Petplan for Raymond as they cover things other insurers don't, and they can even pay your vet directly, which can be a big help. No, Raymond, that doesn't mean you can spend all the extra cash on treats. Terms, conditions and excesses apply. Petplan is a trading name of Allianz Insurance PLC.
His grandfather won Crafts, the rather wonderfully named Fabulous Willy. You know, when you're showing a dog, they talk about the handler.
Yeah, yeah.
So-and-so is handling. Finished the sentence.
It took me a while. Did it? That is rather brilliant.
This week on Walking the Dog, Raymond and I met up with broadcaster and writer Claire Balding. And yes, Raymond, I know, host of Crafts. Claire took us to West London's Chiswick House and Gardens, and it was so fascinating and moving hearing what a huge impact dogs have had on her life. She very sadly lost her Tibetan Terrier Archie a few years ago, but she's channeled that into a lovely tribute by writing a book, Isle of Dogs, which is all about our unique relationship with dogs. It's a fabulous read, and Claire is a fabulous person to go for a walk with, partly because she's brilliant company, but also I've never seen Raymond being that obedient. He was genuinely looking at me as if to say, see, she makes me want to be a better dog. I so hope you enjoy our chat. Do remember to follow us and do keep listening every week. I'll hand over now to the woman herself. Here's Claire and Raymond.
Look at you, you lovely little mover.
Oh, thanks, Claire. I made an effort today.
He is. Oh, sorry, not you. Raymond, you are such a... Gosh, you're like a little dressage pony. Look at you pointing your toe. And do you ever get him cut really short for the winter, just so the long hair doesn't get wet every
he
day?
He is a lot of grooming.
Yeah.
And I do, exactly. In the summer, when it's kind of extreme seasons.
Yes.
Oh, Raymond.
So this is where we walked Archie every day. And had a gang of mates who would meet up. The cafe never used to be so smart. There was a really, you know, run-down little shed that faced completely the wrong way, so faced north, and it was always really cold. And they've rebuilt the cafe, and quite rightly put all the seating area out on the south side.
So in case you hadn't worked it out already, I'm so excited to have this woman on Walking the Dog. I'm with the very wonderful Claire Balding. We're at Chiswick House in West London, and I've brought Raymond along.
Hello.
And we've just run into a...
Hello, hi there, morning.
Hello.
Oh, look at that.
Yeah.
What is that?
It's a Shih Tzu. He's a Shih Tzu.
What happened to you?
Archie, oh, he's no longer with us, I'm afraid. And I'm sort of waiting and plotting and looking for the next...
Well, this isn't yours then.
No. Yeah.
This is Raymond.
Raymond's my new friend.
I like it. Nice to meet you. So, Claire, this was where you would walk Archie, your dog who really sadly you lost a few years back.
Yeah, so he was 15 and a half and he had a fantastic life. And he made, and this is the wonderful thing about dogs, and you know this, and everybody, you know, will know it who walks their dogs in a park. Your dog makes friends for you because your dog will go up to other dogs and say hello. And some dogs will go, rah, get lost. And others will go, hello back. The lovely waterfall here running into the big lake. So it's really nicely landscaped. It's a great place.
Claire, so I feel like you're trying to sell it to me.
But, you know, every day we meet up with mates here and you know, that's how our group of London friends was formed. So everybody, you know, the eldest is 80 something, the youngest is probably me actually, but everybody comes from different backgrounds, different work experience, as it were, different lives, and we're all still mates nearly 20 years later.
And Archie came into your life. He was a Tibetan Terrier.
Yeah, his grandfather One Crafts, the rather wonderfully named Fabulous Willie, which I think, in fact, I know that they did. The breeders did that deliberately because, you know, when you're showing a dog, they talk about the handler.
Yeah.
So-and-so is handling. Yes. Finish the sentence.
It took me a while. Did it? That is rather brilliant. And it was when
And that
you...
was Archie's grandfather, Fabulous Willie. So if you want to let Raymond off, you can. If he's...
Let's sit. Ray.
Good boy, Raymond.
I'm going to say, Claire, he's better on grass.
Mm-hmm. We'll come out the end of this path onto grass. Come on, Raymond, good boy. There we go.
So go on. So when you met Alice, was that a can we get a dog? That was a big
Pretty
thing.
Pretty quickly, I was very keen to get a dog, yeah.
Yeah.
And I knew she had actually a Shih Tzu in her former life. So I knew that she could do the dog thing. Yeah. But you know what it's like when you're in your 20s and 30s, life is so busy and you're constantly, you know, you're working hard.
Yeah.
And it's not always, and it's not a case of it not always being easy. I think it's not easy or difficult. It's whether it's right for a dog.
Yeah.
And we needed to be somewhere settled, you know, with a garden, which I didn't have till that point, until we got together. So I couldn't have done it sooner. And also, because Alice worked shift work at that time for Radio 4, actually our lives dovetailed quite well. We might not have seen much of each other, but we saw a lot of the dog. So one of us was always home. We never once had to use a dog walker.
Yeah.
And that's amazing, actually. And then when she left Radio 4, she could decide, you know, a bit more when and what she wanted to do. And I tend to be quite busy in the summer, or very busy in the summer, and less so autumn, winter. So when I'm writing, obviously, you know, getting out and going for a walk, preferably with a dog, is part of my daily routine and actually quite an important part of the creative process.
Yeah.
I need to walk to help me cogitate. Oh, look, he's gone straight through that muddy puddle. What's happening?
I'll tell you what's happening.
This is like a transformation.
I'll tell you what's happening, Claire Balding. Yeah. He's with you and he wants to impress you.
He's going, come on, I can do this. Watch me. I'm a solid muddy dog. Good boy.
So that must have been so heartbreaking when you lost Archie, though, Claire. I'm so sorry you had to go through that.
And actually, do you know, well, everyone does. Everyone who has a dog is going to go through that. And if you're, well, I don't know, what do you choose, you know, how are you choosing? We had a puppy before Archie. We had a really sweet white, little pure white Tibetan Terrier puppy, and he got killed on the road outside our house, and it was the shock of that. I still sometimes lie in bed at night and I remember because I saw it, and it was just really bad luck. He followed me back out of the door and I hadn't shut the gate properly, and a car never came down that road. We lived in a really quiet road then, and a car was coming down way too fast, and it was just all of that accident of timing. And that was such a huge shock. With Archie, it was the opposite, because we had to make the decision to have him put down and then know for 3 days before it happened that it was going to happen. So that sort of, we'll go over there and then. You know, that's awful, because you kind of, you know, we were both very upset and we kept crying, and he doesn't know why we're crying. So that, I don't know what.
Well, you know,
it's pretty awful either way, but what you get in between is the most joyful, life-enhancing addition to your family. And so I'd rather have that.
Yeah.
And the pain's the price you pay. I mean, gosh, I guess if you're super lucky, your dog dies in its sleep at the age of 17 and having had a wonderful life, but they do go through, obviously, I met someone the other day whose dog had terrible arthritis. And we were talking about that and the knowledge that your dog is living in pain, and they're very good at covering pain.
Yeah.
And that's a hard thing, you know, how do you, who are you keeping the dog alive for? Because you're not always doing it for the dog, right? You're doing it for you. You think you're doing it for them. But if you can't explain, I do think you've constantly got to ask yourself, who am I doing this for?
Your dad said something really lovely to you about, you know, the inevitability of having to say goodbye to dogs.
He said, the thing, and this is when Percy got killed, he said, you can't replace the dog, but you can fill the hole they've left, which you can't, obviously, with a person. And so actually, when Percy got killed, we got Archie very quickly because we couldn't bear it, couldn't bear coming down to the kitchen. And, you know, all this sort of dog paraphernalia that we got because Percy was our first dog was sitting there, and I couldn't bear it. So
yeah,
we went back to the same breeders, and that's when we got Archie. He did live a very full and long life. Lots of people didn't like Archie. My parents included, I think. Lucy, who was my ramblings producer, she didn't like him. Well, he was not easy, and he wasn't, you know, he'd have a snap. If you try, he didn't take authority well. He didn't, we'll go around the side of the pond. So there's this really beautiful, do you see the arch bridge? It's lovely.
Oh, I love this. Yeah.
And there's a little
so
island
here. So pretty, isn't it?
Lots of herons around.
Come on, Raymond. He sniffs a lot on walks, Claire.
Yeah, so he should.
Is that okay, do you think?
Yes. That's him chatting. That's him going, my word, stimulation. And actually, in the book, I think, good boy, look at him galloping towards us. Hey, he was a good fella. So the purpose behind writing the book, partly to look for what would be our next dog, but also just so I could hang out with dogs and dog people, really. I mean, that's, the, you know, have a reason for doing so. Go and find, be able to ring somebody up, like Dogs for Good or whatever, and say, look, I'm writing this book. Can I come and spend a day watching puppy training?
Yeah.
And they say yes, because you're writing a book. So
I knew what you were up to.
Yeah, that's what
I had your number.
Yeah.
And you...
And it was lovely. It was great to be able to do that. And anyway, one of the things I really learned was the difference between exercise and stimulation and how much certain breeds need stimulation. So what Raymond's doing now, this is massively stimulating for him because loads of different smells, lots of dogs come in this park. It's a new environment. He's meeting different people as well, different sounds. You know, that's for him. He'll be exhausted tonight.
Oh, thank God. And as you point out in the book, there's really interesting information, like this thing about dogs being able to smell. What is it, Claire? It's a teaspoon of sugar or something.
Yeah, in an Olympic-sized swimming pool. Yeah. So that's how strong their olfactory receptors are, how incredibly highly tuned they are, which is why they can smell not just drugs and cash and explosives and find, you know, bodies after an earthquake, but also they can smell cancer. They can smell Parkinson's. They can smell... They know when you're having a sugar low, if you're diabetic or a sugar high. They can predict the onset of a epileptic episode, anxiety, you know, that kind of thing. They are massively highly tuned. And some charities and organisations have trained dogs specifically to do things. So, and actually, if you think about it, army dogs, police dogs, all that is again, training them for a specific task. And dogs want to help. They want a job.
You
a lot of
that.
Breeds and a look. Lot of, well, look, Raymond says, oh, I'm your co-presenter. Would you just wait for me? I'm on my way. You want a job, don't you, Raymond?
Yeah. Claire, I want to go back because you talk about this in Isle of Dogs and also in your book, My Animals and Other
Family
which I love and everyone loved. It won awards and was a bestseller. I want to go back to your family history with dogs, because it would take the entire podcast to name every single dog you had. Because your family were kind of wild about dogs, weren't they? That was so much a big part of your family structure.
Yes. So they mainly had boxers and lurchers. And my brother still has boxers. My mum's still got a boxer. And my parents, morning.
Hello.
And my parents had a lurcher until earlier this year.
What's that one, Claire?
That looked to me like a larger form of, it's a terrier, and it could be, it's bigger than a Welsh Terrier. I'm just going to look up a Lucas Terrier because somebody was recommending Lucas Terrier to me. So it looked a bit...
So I just said to Claire 2 seconds ago, what do you think that dog is? And she's...
Now looking up.
Yeah.
Because it's black, tightly curled. Could be a Kerry Blue without the... Because that's got the tech, do you think?
Oh, yes, I think that.
But without
it's got a slight...
Didn't have the grooming like that.
The Terrier, I think you're right. You see, that tells me a lot about you.
Uh-huh.
Is that you're quite... You need to know.
Oh, yeah.
Are you quite like that? You're quite...
Oh, yes.
I need to see something through to completion.
Yes. And I love knowledge. I love facts. So anything I do, whether it's sport or... dogs or, you know, a royal event, or there's loads of homework to be done. For the Queen's Platinum Jubilee procession, which I was commentating on, which was that massive event, came up the Mall, thousands of people in it, different floats, all quite fun, but chaotic. I got sent a document from the researcher who was terrific. It was 400 pages long, and I read it. And I went back to him on a couple of things and said, I think this... Can I just double check this? Can I just... And he went, you've read it all. I said, yes. And he went, wow. I said, yes, but surely that's what you meant me to do. Anyway, we then condensed it down to about 10 pages so that I could have, in the order that the procession was happening, I just had bullet points on each moment. He was great, actually, because he was... sitting alongside me and would point at things when we suddenly got these dancers thinking, okay, now which ones are these? but yeah, it's fun. I like, you know, it's like constantly being at school, isn't it?
Yeah.
But I get to do my favourite subjects because I'm picking them all the time, so.
And you grew up with, as you say, your mother loved boxers.
Yeah.
And I feel like the lurchers were more your dad's thing.
Oh, very much so, yeah. I mean, and actually, because the lurchers are super fast because they've got... you know, greyhound in them. If one of the horses could basically leave the lurcher in its wake, then you knew you had a fast horse on your hands. Because over a short distance, a furlong or so, they don't stay really, they won't go a full half mile, but if they joined in the last furlong and the racehorse could burn them off, then
and
you had a good one.
Your mum's first boxer, Candy.
Yes.
I feel like Candy was a lot more than just a dog to you.
Yeah. There's a sweet picture of me as a baby lying alongside Candy. And that, I think, shows that, you know, Candy very much thought she was my... Look at this bit. See the pond and the temple.
It's that a folly or something?
Yeah, it's all very capability brand.
It's beautiful, kind of, isn't it? Very Peter Greenaway.
Yeah.
Candy was a huge... part of your childhood, wasn't she?
So I think Candy thought she was the nanny, and I think I thought she was my mother, because that's what I'm looking at. So, hey, why not? I think I say in the book, you know, she was my one and only companion until my brother was born. Candy was it for me. She was my world. She had a few litters of puppies. And we kept one of her puppies, who then became my dog, and she was called Flossie. But Mum always says she wasn't as much of a character as Candy.
I have to mention your grandmother, because she's the most hilarious woman.
Oh, yes.
What I loved is that I actually think you were just writing honestly about families.
Yes.
And I actually think you were quite early to the party with that. Now everyone is honest about the messiness of the... But I think back then people were still sort of...
being polite about family members.
And you were just very honest. And I loved... I thought... I came away from that thinking, oh, finally, a family that feels a bit like mine in all its messed up fabulousness.
I think what I was honest about was Grandma didn't really like me. And she didn't. I mean, you know. Now, and... That, and I didn't feel, because Grandma had died, so I'm not sure I could have written that book if Grandma was still alive.
Yeah.
She'd died, so I could be pretty open about this is what I saw and how I saw it. She adored my brother, and fair dues, he was much sweeter than me. I mean, he was a really sweet little boy, and easier to love, and I was tricky. and had an opinion and answered back and asked questions, and I was just a bit of a pain.
Well,
look at this little Jack Russell. Isn't that sweet?
You weren't what was expected of a woman from her generation.
No, so Grandma wouldn't let... My mother got really good A-level grades, and all her brothers went to Cambridge. And my grandmother wouldn't let her go to university. She said, I will not have a blue stocking for a daughter. So I think in my mother's head, I was going to get the opportunity, that certainly the educational opportunity she hadn't had. So,
yeah.
Yeah.
I feel you probably did have the life that your mother was, you know, obviously a very bright woman. And I wonder if you...
No, I don't know that, because I think mum, you know, my mother's still very young. She's only 74. Yeah. She is having a terrific life she wanted in many ways. So, no, I don't think that. I just think I've certainly had the life I would choose.
Yeah.
That's the point. And I love it because I'm constantly stimulated. I do loads of really different things. You know, I look in the diary, go, okay, today, doing the podcast first thing. I've got a meeting with my head of BBC Sport. I've got a meeting about the Festival of Remembrance. We're going out with friends tonight. Tomorrow I'm doing a book signing in Stow-on-the-Wold. Then I'm having lunch with my goddaughter. Then I'm doing a photo shoot. Then I'm seeing my dad because it's his birthday.
So how many days is
and
this
that's
in?
That's 2 days. Then Wednesday I'm doing voiceover in the morning and then I'm going up to Manchester. Hello, little one. Hey there.
What's this?
Jack Russell?
Yeah.
She's lovely.
Bye-bye.
They're cracking dogs, I think. Look, and she's going to really learn to walk on the lead. That little tail constantly wagging.
Going on a dog walk with Claire Balding, it's like watching Crufts. It's the most gripping thing she does. She's got to learn to walk on the lead, and it's amazing. I feel honestly, I'd watch this. Yeah, I found reading in The Isle of Dogs and in your first book just about your relationship with animals. I find it really touching how important they've been to you and how. I kind of feel as well, because your father was obviously a racehorse trainer, and not just any racehorse trainer. I mean, he was the racehorse trainer, really, wasn't he?
And well, he wasn't Henry Cecil.
Well, no, but he
Henry was
trained
the
Queen's racehorses. And I feel you grew up, obviously, when you first started riding, that just must have felt very natural. That was never, will I do this or will I not? You were just put on a horse, presumably, when you were very young.
Absolutely, stuck on the pony. Yeah, I mean, honestly, I had the perfect upbringing for a kid who loves rolling around in the mud. You know, I just had this very rural, feral childhood.
That's what your grandmother called you.
Yes, and my brother and I would, you know, hang out and take ourselves off to the barn and, you know, swing like Tarzan from a rope until he... burnt his hands and let go and broke his leg. That was a shame. Anyway, but you know, we'll play with the puppies or paint the puppy shed and paint each other. That wasn't so clever. But you know, we just got on with living. And it was fantastic.
And you had a Shetland pony called Valkyrie.
Yes.
Who was given to you by
the Queen. So yeah, when I was born... It was just good timing, really, because...
It was just good timing.
Because Prince Edward had finished... Right, you know, he was moved on to slightly bigger ponies. And Valkyrie needed a home that could cope with her sort of various issues. She had sweet itch and she had laminitis. So she needed to go somewhere where they knew what they were doing. Yeah, she taught me to ride. She taught Andrew to ride. She had two foals while she was with us. She lived with us. I mean, you know, she lived with us for the rest of her life. She lived till she was about 30. And the Queen would come and inspect her racehorses. And at the end of the row of gleaming thoroughbreds, there'd be this little fat, hairy Shetland, which always made her laugh. So that was good.
I really like the sound of the Queen from when you've talked about her, that you do a brilliant... I'm not even going to call it an impression of her. It's a tribute because it's very respectful and lovely. And
I talk about her corgis as well in the book and about the history of the royal family and dogs, which is really interesting because, of, as you know, the King Charles Spaniel and the King Charles Cavalier Spaniel, both named after monarchs. Queen Elizabeth I was very keen on her dogs. There would have been hunting dogs and sort of big, impressive deerhound types for earlier monarchs. But Queen Victoria is the one who really shook it up in terms of the variety of breeds that she had. And partly that was due to her love of dogs. And she had a spaniel very early on in life who she adored. As the empire was spreading, so her subjects would come back with trophies. And they knew she loved dogs, so they'd bring dogs from all over the world. So she had truffle dogs and Bedouin dogs and Canadian Eskimo dogs, and she had a Pekingese looted from the royal palace in Peking.
This over here, right?
We can go this way so we don't have to go through the puddle. Isn't this some conservatory fantastic? So they have camellias in here in the spring. It's lovely.
And you were saying you got married here.
Yeah, where we had our party at the house. Yeah.
Can I let him off the lead here, do you think,
Claire?
Oh,
yeah, don't worry about
it. I get that feeling with you, Claire, that, you know, you're the person that I'd say, do you think it's all right if we do this? And if you said it was okay,
do it.
I'd think it was, because that's the head girl in you, which you were head girl.
Yes, but I got into trouble first. So when I go back and speak at my school, and you know, they think I'm going to talk all about this, you know, she was head girl, etc. And I start off by saying, yes, but what happened in the first term of my second year, and they're all sitting there looking at me, I say, I got suspended. And the teachers go, okay, I'm here to tell you, you don't have to be defined by the worst mistake you make in your life. You can turn this around.
Well, I think that's what's so interesting about you, is that if you looked at your trajectory superficially on a CV, you'd see father was the, you know, Queen's trainer, make him sound like he was working out with her.
The Queen's personal trainer.
Pilates instructor. Yeah. The Queen's racehorse trainer. You were head girl. You were president of the Cambridge Union. Now, a superficial reading of that, I'd think, she's that girl.
We'd say, pathetic overachiever.
No, I'd say, oh no, that woman, you know, she's going to make you feel very inadequate. She's one of those girls, there were no bumps in the road, everything was perfect. And of course, actually, I feel there was a point in your life when you really chose to turn everything around, didn't you? I'm talking about shoplifting gate, Claire.
Oh yeah, well, yeah. So I was only 10 when that happened. But it's pretty instructive in life to know when you go through something that is so shameful and you sort of know why you did it, because you were trying to impress other people and be part of a gang. And I understand peer pressure. I get it. I think that's the moment when I thought, right, fitting in is never going to suit me. I'm going to get into trouble if I try and fit in. Whereas I think most people think I'll stay out of trouble if I fit in. And that's maybe if I, you know, analyze myself, which I very rarely do. But that's maybe I look at that and go, right, that's the moment where I thought, I'm going to be different. I am different. Live with it. And, you know, try and make the best of it. And one of the analogies that I would use is, I think as people, and particularly through our teenage years and sometimes right into our 20s, we aren't half obsessed with the selfie in every sense, right? We're constantly thinking, when we get up in the morning, what will I wear? What will they think of me? How am I going to fit into this situation? Me, 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 me. And actually, if you just flip that camera around and go, God, look at the light coming through those leaves. Look at the smile on people's faces. Look at that dog. Look at that sporting event. Look at this. Look at that art. Listen to that music. And you walk into a room not thinking, how am I fitting in here? But who's interesting here? Who can I speak to? Who am I going to learn from? It's so releasing. And I find that to be very helpful for me. And because I cover a lot of events where I am looking at it and commentating about it or presenting it or having to react to it, it's just a reset in the brain. But it's really helpful for me and my happiness. Because I'm not so obsessed with how do I look in this situation, because there's so much that's much more interesting out there.
But it's so interesting that you say that, because
something that's often been said about you, and this was particularly said of you after the 2012 Olympics, is that, you know, you're forensic, you know your stuff. And I think that's so interesting what you said about focusing. It's kind of living in the present, isn't it?
Yes.
So you're focusing on what you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
And what you're never doing when you're doing something like the Olympics is, what does my voice sound like? Does that sound funny? Do I look nice? Does my makeup look okay? You know, all that stuff.
I probably should worry a bit more about that, but I don't. Yeah.
But that's why you sound so in control and interested in your subject.
I think lots of people do that. And, you know, I'm lucky I work in an industry where there are so many talented commentators, pundits, presenters, and everyone brings something different to the table and to the party. So you're constantly learning from listening to other people. I approach it like I would if I was watching it at home. What do I want to know? What can Chris Hoy or Mark Foster or Becky Adlington, what can they tell me here that adds to? Not how much do I know and how can I show everyone how clever I am, but what do I need, what do we all need to know that will enhance our understanding and therefore our enjoyment of this bizarre Madison race that's going to go on for 250 laps or something, you know.
you were a really good jockey, Claire, weren't you?
No, I was a decent amateur.
Excuse me, you beat the Princess Royal.
Yeah, but that's the horse, not me, isn't it? Come on. No, I was a decent amateur jockey for a few seasons. I, you know, was not the right build for it and therefore had to work extremely hard. Look at these aces, aren't they pretty?
Oh.
And see how the light's catching that? Isn't that
aren't
gorgeous?
Aren't they beautiful? When I see trees like that, Claire, I understand why sort of artists get inspired.
Oh, totally.
Don't you?
I went to, when I was in Glasgow for the World Cycling Championships and the Banksy exhibition was on. Oh my
gosh.
Yeah.
So, what was it like?
So good, so interesting, so clever, so visionary. So now I look at things going, oh, what would Banksy do here? Look at that sundial, Raymond. What do you think? Have you had a nice time? Yes, that's mainly what it's about. If you've had a nice time, so have I.
You're very good with animals, aren't you? Mm. Why do you think that is?
I think because I grew up with them. I used to want to be, I wanted to be Dr. Doolittle. I wanted to understand what they said. One of my favourite books when I was young was Olga de Polga by Michael Bond. Do you know
yes.
who wrote Paddington?
Yeah.
And there's a really, so Olga de Polga is a guinea pig. And there's one point at which Olga de Polga can speak. At midnight, only for like a minute. And she just says, I love you. Yes, Raymond. And that's what you would say. If you could speak, you'd just say, I love you.
This podcast is sponsored by Petplan, who help keep the nation's dogs happy and healthy. There was so much to think about when I got my dog, Raymond. Toilet training, grooming, food, and just how many belly rubs can one woman reasonably be expected to give to a Shih Tzu every day? But one thing I've never had to worry about is paying for veterinary care because I decided to insure Raymond with Petplan, who are the UK's number one pet insurance provider. Oh, don't get jealous, Raymond. Of course you're still my number one. Just a tad on the high maintenance side. Terms, conditions and excesses apply. Petplan is a trading name of Allianz Insurance PLC.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
When you say you weren't that good as a jockey?
Oh, I was all right. Listen.
You were?
I was very relaxed in a race. I was very calm. I could see gaps. I could judge pace. I wasn't strong in a finish. I was dreadful. But, you know, as no Rachel Blackmore, let's not, you know, there are standards. And I was an all right amateur. That's all. And I rode some good horses, and horses ran for me, which was nice. You know, some horses suddenly started winning races that hadn't for a long time. And you couldn't win money as an amateur, obviously. But they had a couple of really good series that were sponsored. And one of them, you could win a car.
Yes.
And I won my first car. I won my first car.
It was a brand new.
No, it was a brand new Mini, red Mini. And I won my weight in champagne. Now, that was a result, because I was significantly heavier than anyone else.
Do you know that?
I got a lot of champagne.
Did that put you off? Because that whole weight thing.
Yeah, you weigh yourself a lot.
Yeah.
You
are governed by that, aren't you, for your entire career?
I'm reading Gabby Logan's book at the moment, and there's loads of things you don't know. And she was a rhythmic gymnast, and you know, she says very early on, I think she had a pretty unhealthy relationship with food, and, you know, she needed to be a certain shape rather than, whereas I needed to be a specific weight.
It's really interesting as well, because I get the sense there was this idea in your family that first past the post,
yes,
it was that or nothing. And I understand that, because if you grow up in a sporting environment, there's no point, you can't not have that attitude. And I think that's interesting, because I can see why that's translated to be you being so good in a live environment, that you kind of thrive on that.
I like the unpredictability of live. I love it when everything starts to go wrong in a program and the running order is ripped up. I really enjoy chaos, actually. I mean, not in a... Do you watch The Morning Show?
I love it.
I'm not as much of a chaos fiend as Corey, who just thrives off that.
Yeah.
But I quite enjoy it. I kind of go, right, this is where I, you know, earn the money. And my brain slows down. And that I think is a legacy of having ridden in races, that actually when you're under pressure, the whole Clive Woodward think clearly under pressure, you know, come up here, Raymond. Yes, darling. All right. Sit here. All right? Because that's warmer than the stone. Yeah. You know, that your brain can slow down and you can think really logically in the most stressful of situations. Yeah. And I quite enjoy that.
But that means you must be very good in a crisis.
I'm good at logistics and I'm good at practical, you know, right, let's do this. I'll take you here. I'll make this happen. You have, you know, I can do that. And I quite like helping people out in that sense. I'm not probably as good as an emotional support. Alice would be better at that. She's very good at emotional support. She can give
Why do you think
a hug
that
at
is?
The right time. Oh, I just think she's much more emotionally mature than I am. If I went to my mother in an emotional state, she would say, either pull yourself together or let's take the dogs for a walk. And we'd all be better by the time we'd taken the dogs for a walk. We don't have to talk about this. Do we have to talk about this? That's what she would say. Why do we have to talk about this? Why is everyone talking about the menopause now? I mean, honestly, we didn't talk about it. Just get on with it. Stuff and nonsense.
And but it's funny. Know, it's interesting because I went to... I felt a similar thing to you, just that sense of difference. That I went to a posh girls' school and I felt not accepted because my parents were sort of media. My dad was in worked for the BBC and my mum was an actor. But we didn't have money. And so I was...
I get that totally.
Did
and
you
I
have that?
Completely identify. Yes. We had the money to go to posh school because Mr. Mellon, who owned Mill Reef, had set up a trust fund. But what my parents didn't have was the money to keep up. So no, I couldn't go on the school skiing holiday and I couldn't come with a suitcase full of new clothes every term to wear at weekends. I couldn't have that, the new blazer. I was going to get it secondhand from... And that's not poor, but it's just not, it's A, not extravagant at all, ever. And also not, I think in many ways, just not able to. And I do think they probably, as much as my father ever thought about these things, which I'm not sure he did, but mum will have thought, well, it's good for you, you can't have everything. Yeah. Why should everything be shiny new? No, there are things you shouldn't have, and, you know, wait for that, and, you know, don't ever fly business class because it'll spoil you. It'll spoil you for life. It's like, oh, okay, but what if I want to fly business class, actually? I mean, if you get an upgrade, I mean, that's different. Why would you pay for it? Well, because it's better, Mum. It's just better.
Does that leave you with a slight hangover, though, of feeling slight?
I feel I'm terrible at spending money. Yeah. Really terrible. Yeah. Alice has to make me. Absolutely make me. And does that, you know, I eventually I'll say, no, you were right. You were right. We should have gone for that better room in such and such hotel. And, you know, but I will quite often take a bus back. I quite like taking the bus. So I, you know, she'll say, why didn't you get a cab back from so-and-so? I say, oh, because the 94 bus goes direct. And I can sit on the top floor of the bus, front left. To me, that's business class. I can look in everybody's houses and I get a phone signal the whole way. So I can actually sit and do my work. I can answer my emails. I don't, you know. That's, and I quite enjoy it, so...
But that is a hangover from your family experience,
I think. Oh, totally, yeah. And I don't know what you call it, because my mother was not a Presbyterian, but it's that sort of, you know, she's got a very strong Protestant work ethic and doesn't believe in being flash and showy.
Yeah.
I mean, really doesn't believe in it. So she's very happy to take coats from me that, you know, I say, here, Mum, have this one. I've worn it a few times on telly, you can have it. And she's very happy to do that. But she wouldn't buy one. God, no.
But they must be so proud of you now, your parents, Claire.
Well, Dad suddenly doesn't really... He's unfortunately got, you know, pretty advanced dementia. So,
yeah, that I'm
but
sorry.
But he says to everyone in the home, if I go and see... This, do you recognise her? This one, she's famous. She's famous. And it's so... It's excruciating, especially for my mother, who's like, it's like literally the worst thing in the world to be is famous. I mean, the second worst thing in the world to be is extravagant. Oh my God, what will people think?
You'll never guess. It's Claire's famous. I think they whisper it. It's brought great shame on the family.
Yeah,
it's we've terrible. Never recovered.
Never recovered. Why does she have to show off so much? She's presenting. Oh no,
that would have been bad. I remember I found a letter after my mother died, and I found a letter, and it said Emmy is a dreadful show off. And do you know the fact that I remember that? It's like I've never forgotten it. And what
fascinated the bone? Mm.
But it fascinated me that was a bad thing. And it's interesting when you're talking about your mum, I can imagine that would have been a bad thing as
well.
Oh,
but also the constant, you were so competitive.
Yeah.
Like that,
yeah.
Because it's a bad thing because it's not feminine. It's all right for Andrew to be competitive, as he should be, you know. But I shouldn't be. Anyway, hey.
And yeah.
Listen, it makes me laugh because what I do, and I have an American cousin who needed a bit of, you know, a bit of help.
That's from your dad's side, isn't
yeah.
it?
Yeah. And... I said one of my things that really helps me is to think everything is copy. The classic Nora Ephron line, everything is copy. So anything like that is said, you take it, you turn it into a story. I talk to kids about this. Turn it into a story because you own it then. It's your narrative. Yeah. And make it funny because when you can laugh at it, it doesn't hurt you anymore.
And actually, that's what I really felt with your memoir. And I love your writing. I love this with Isle of Dogs as well, that whenever... you tell those sort of stories, I think there is, it's that difference between autobiography and memoir, is that autobiography is what happened and memoir is how you felt when it happened and what you did with what happened. And I look at what you did and that competitive spirit you've channeled into everything that you've done really positively, haven't you?
Well, I think I know I need to be tested, and that's good, and it's good for me. But I think what I have hopefully learned is empathy, and I think I probably didn't have that. Maybe lots of people don't in their teens and their 20s. I think I just thought, right, this is me, you know, ploughing my way through, and you must keep going. And now with that slightly broader vision of look around you, I am very sensitive to how other people are getting on, and actually I really enjoy that. So if I'm working with someone who's never done an Olympics before, I'll channel all my energy into making their experience good, and that helps me. But it also gives me real pleasure to watch them start to enjoy it and get better. Alice says I constantly offer career advice, unsolicited career advice. I said, no, occasionally people do ask me, actually. She said, yeah, but you'll offer it anyway. Yes, yes, I will.
But you know what? That doesn't surprise me because I'm telling you about your life now, but when you were at school, there was this point when you turned things around and you'd had a sort of outward bound outdoors activity. It was one of those things that they send you on. And you came back, didn't you? And you were then made head of house. And the comment that was given was not because of your achievements. It was how you helped and inspired everyone else.
But the funniest thing, okay, so on that outward bound, we were split into alphabetical. So my friend Jerry, who's an A, she was Jerry Avenel. So I was standing, she was frightened of heights, and I was trying to get her from one tree to the next. I said, come on, Jerry, you can do it. On a wire. You can do it. Just one foot, just keep looking at me. And she goes, Claire, fuck off. It's just like that classic, would you stop trying to help me and just shut up? But yeah, I was a good chivier, and even if not wanted, and I think that's the common theme here. I'll help people even if they don't want it. There's a very funny sketch. Tracy Ullman's done this really funny sketch of me, and it's that. It's constantly trying to do other people's jobs. And it's so me, like it had to have been informed by someone who knew me. I'll do that, I'll make that cup of coffee. No, let me do that. I'll drive the car. You're the driver, but I'll take the car. Don't you worry, you have a rest. That really, yeah, so I'm actually just really annoyed.
Well, Alice, your partner, says you are a backseat driver. I mean, she didn't call me this morning and say bitch about you and say Claire is such a backseat driver. But I have heard her go on record. I think she might say it in Isle of Dogs because you hand over the reins to her at one point.
Yeah.
Are you a backseat driver when it comes to life then? Where's that from?
Oh, when it comes to life, I don't know. No, with the car, it's just because, you know, she doesn't see gaps and she doesn't have the instinct to go. If you're going to go, go. I was doing this lovely series this summer about rivers for Channel 5 and we had a fantastic team. I really enjoyed it. And a production company called 2-4. Anyway, I wasn't driving. And I won't name names, but the person who was a really, you know, one of them was quite inexperienced and a bit nervous, gets to a roundabout, hesitating. And I went, just, if you're going to go, go. So he now uses that in life all the time. As Claire would say, if you're going to go, go.
That would scare me though. Claire Balding say, if you're going to go, go, I would think, I would feel like your horse. I'd feel like Mill Reef.
Well, that's the trouble. I do that a bit as well, going, Go on, gap on the left, and I point, and Alice just looks, stop it.
Do you know what's really interesting, and this touches on the book as well, is that I get the impression, which is what I find really touching about your family life, is that your dad, for example, who had this amazing relationship with horses, obviously, and this affinity with them, and this understanding and empathy of them, that was a channel for his emotions, and I think that's healthy. I can see that because at least he was channeling it. A lot of people from that generation and from that world wouldn't channel it at all. Mm. I think it made me understand your family and why you've turned out the way that you have, which seems to be quite a good egg.
That's very kind of you to say so.
What do you think you've... What quality?
No, I'm just like you, massive show-off.
Are you a show-off?
Our mothers would go, God, it's just dreadful, isn't it? But if your mother was an actress, then come on. So Alice was an actress, and I remember when I first introduced her to my mother, I could see her do that thing of, oh, an actress. It's like, what's wrong with that? I was like really impressed. But yes.
It's a bit the King's Mistress, isn't
slightly,
it?
You know, yes, isn't it funny, that snobbery about acting? Do you want to get
that's how they would have seen it.
All right, sweetie.
But were they lovely about it? Because I am...
Oh, they adore Alice. Yeah, yeah, they do. And actually, my father was particularly impressed with her golfing skill. So he could finally play golf against someone who was actually better than him. And my nephew, Toby, is rather a good golfer. The kids generally are good golfers. But Toby loves playing with Alice because she teaches him how to do it properly. Yeah, very sweet.
As I say, you after you left Cambridge, you weren't going to be a presenter originally, were you?
No, I wanted to be a writer.
How did you make that move to presenting? Because I know you were a trainee at the BBC, weren't you?
Yeah.
What made you think oh, this is what I want to do? Was it the racing that led you there?
Timing was everything, and Five Live was just starting as a radio station. So before that, there wasn't a speech network. You know, Radio 4 was it, and that had kind of, you know, all sorts of programmes that still exist, but a bit of drama, but it didn't have rolling news. The rolling news concept is very recent, and sport being such a big part of that is, you know, it's only 25 years old or something. So my timing was very good. The chance that I was offered from a guy called Cornelius Lysett, who was the BBC's racing correspondent, was entirely based on the pitch of my voice. That he said, well, if you can write and if your voice sounds okay, then why don't you try radio? So the big thing in life, I think, is if you're offered those opportunities, it is still down to you whether you say yes or not. So people talk about luck and they say, oh, I was lucky. The bit that's not lucky is the fact that you said yes. That's not luck, that's you.
Yeah.
So any job, when you're offered it, you know, right, do I take this chance or not? And you might think of all the things that are wrong with it, and quite often in our line of work, it doesn't pay enough and it's going to be, you know, inconvenient, and you might be working hours that you don't appreciate. I mean, I worked full night shifts for a while, and they're pretty awful, to be honest. I worked over Christmas, I missed weddings, you know, friends' wedding, all of that. But that was the choice I made. That's what I wanted to do.
Yeah.
And now I'm in a position where I can choose a bit more, not to have to get up early in the mornings, which I don't like. Funny, isn't it? Coming from a world in which I always got up early, I don't like working in the morning. I am not a great functioner at between...
Really?
Oh, until after 9 o'clock. No.
See, I would have thought
you were...
I need
a couple of cups of coffee and then I'm fine. And I like late nights, so I like doing the evening highlights at the Olympics, because I like the quick reaction to things that have happened rather than the prediction of what's going to happen.
But that's interesting, though, because I think you also... And I think women have often been conditioned to think, I'm not trained for this, I can't do it. I think men have been more encouraged to think, well, I'll learn as I go. I'll say yes, and then, you know...
And that's changing, thank God. I'm working on a theory, and I'd be interested to know what you think, that true equality is actually when we're all allowed to be average. You know, people think equality is about women being offered, chances at the top table. Exceptional women still are... Exceptional women are still overperforming massively, but when are you allowed to just be average? And it's not... I'm not saying I want to be average. I don't want to be average, but I'm just like, there are a lot of... You know, I like men. I don't want to live with one, but I like them. And I like working with them. But I've worked with enough to know there are a lot of average men who are in jobs that they get rewarded supremely well for. And it just seems to me that women are either in the exceptional bracket, or they've got the menial tasks where they're being massively underpaid. They're not in the middle section. Why aren't they? That's what... I don't know how one fights for it. The right to be average. It's not really a slogan that works. But do you know what I'm saying? I don't know whether that is a good theory or not. But it makes sense to me that it just... The right to be just good, right? Just be good. Just be basically good. And most women are overperforming to stay level with the average man. Raymond, you've got a little thing sticking on your tail. Can I just get it? Yes, darling.
It's interesting as well, Claire. I imagine when you did the Olympics, was that quite frightening, having all that attention suddenly? Because you were... That's really when I remember suddenly, you know, touches my mum, something's really odd.
I remember we were driving down to... We had a bit of a break between the Olympics and Paralympics, and Alice and I were driving down to Cornwall. And we stopped at the services on the A303. And Alice was filling up the car and I went in... No, other way around. I was filling up the car and she went inside to pay. She came back out and she said, it's changed. Everyone in the service station would be, I think that's Claire Balding. That's Claire Balding. That's Claire Balding. And you know, these kids then, I started talking to these kids and we'd started talking all about sport and it was great. And I was just talking to them about what they'd enjoyed at the Olympics. And we got back in the car and she went, wow, this is really different. She said, it won't last, but it, you know, it's different.
Well, how do you deal with trolls?
Sorry,
do you ignore them?
Yeah, I do actually. I find that's pretty effective. I won't look at social media through the course of a major event. So mainly because I don't want to be distracted.
No.
And they might be really nice comments, but that can be just as, there we go, do you love me more now? Good boy. I don't want to be distracted by the good stuff either, because you can't half fall into a trap of believing the good publicity. So my rule is, you can't believe the good stuff, so I didn't after London 2012, because if you believe the good stuff, you have to believe the bad stuff, and the bad stuff's horrible. So why would I bother, you know? Alice will tell me if I've done something wrong. I did something awful the other day. I did a terrible interview, actually.
What did you do?
Well, I did two awful things. One was I confused Mick Hucknall, who was at a party I was at, with Michael Hutchins, and I was a big NXS fan. So I said, and Michael Hutchins was there. Well, that would be a miracle, as he's been dead for about 15 years. Anyway, the presenter didn't correct me, and I didn't realise till after I came off air, and I suddenly thought, I said Michael Hutchins, and I meant to say Mick Hucknall. Quite often do that, so obviously, same letters and all that. And also, in the course of the interview, he was being very nice to me. And he said, oh, everybody loves you, something, something, something. And I said, oh, they wouldn't, Alice would say they wouldn't if they knew me. And she was sitting next door, and she came, when I came out, she said, but I wouldn't say that. I always say you're the same. She said, don't say that. That makes me sound like a real bitch. And she said, and I wouldn't say that. And I said, no, I know. I was just trying to be funny. Why was I doing that? But I am also quite good at going, nobody was listening. And quite often they're not. No one, seriously, no one has sent me a message saying, you said Michael Hutchins. You didn't mean Michael Hutchins. He died in whatever year he did die.
But
you know,
a lot of people are listening in your case.
Well, they're not concentrating.
One of the things I really respect about you is when I read that you turned down that proposal, because I think that took a lot of... So you were dating a guy at the time. And
oh, sorry, yes.
Come on.
Sorry, I was thinking, which proposal?
A proposal,
yes.
And you were dating this guy who was in the army, and he would have ticked a lot of the boxes.
Yeah.
I can imagine myself at that age thinking, oh, well, I better do this.
Oh, yeah, it would have been very...
Particularly
it would have... They certainly would have... They wouldn't have said, you're better than that. They'd have said, oh, that's perfect.
What? And did you just feel something was off?
It didn't... No, I didn't trust him, so... I was quite right not to trust him.
You were right.
Yeah. Funny enough, I bumped into his ex-wife on the towpath a couple of years ago. She said, you dodged a bullet.
You seem like you're at a very happy place in your life.
Oh, God, I have the best life.
Do you?
You know, as the kids say, I'm living my best life. You know, seriously, I get to do something different every day. I'm constantly stimulated, so I'm like a dog, you know, wagging its tail the whole time, going, woo. I get the adrenaline rush of live TV, but not all the time. And we live and I live with somebody I adore. So, you know, hey, what's not to love? And I have fantastic nibblings as well.
But you made this, didn't you, as well?
Yeah. Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Because you make things happen. There have been points in your life where you didn't get into Cambridge originally. I think a lot of people would have thought, oh, okay, I'm going to slink away and go somewhere else. You thought, no, I'm gonna try again.
Yeah, I did keep trying, yes, I do. So Alice always says, she says, when one door closes, don't embarrass yourself by trying to open it. Whereas I would constantly go, keep pushing, keep pushing, keep pushing, find another door, find a window. She'd go, please don't embarrass yourself.
She's a handle tugger, you're a handle tugger, and she's not.
No.
Would she say it's closed now?
Yeah, it's closed, walk away.
But it's worked for you, hasn't it?
It has, and we're a very good fit, because I think one thing...
Do you think it helps that you're very different, you and Alex?
Oh, God, yes. Massively.
You do Gogglebox together. And
yeah. That gets an amazing response, you know? That is extraordinary. For 2 minutes of telly, every once in a while, because we're never on for longer than that, it is extraordinary, the... reaction it gets, and right across age groups, and so diverse, and you know, but people constantly come up to me and say, oh, I love you on Gogglebox, but your wife's much funnier than you. Yes, I know. Somebody said to me the other day, she's so much cooler than you are. Yes, she is.
But you know what, I think it's so positive as well that you guys are doing that, and I'm not saying this is why you did it, but I think what's happened as a result, I think it's just to see you guys as a couple, and it's...
Yeah, and we sat at home in our house on our sofa watching telly.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, it does.
It feels ridiculous to even be saying that.
No, but a woman came up to me the other day at a book signing, and she said, from a 60-year-old lesbian, she said, I'd like to say thank you. She said, because when I was young, we never saw. She said, we had K.D. Lang and Andrea Dworkin, and that was it. Ellen's the one that made a big difference for me.
Really?
Oh, yeah. When Ellen was on the front of Time magazine, I was in America at the time, actually, and she got Person of the Year or whatever. It's like, my God, there's a, you know, a woman in television who's out and it's not affecting her detrimentally. In fact, it's probably helping. And maybe this isn't something to be ashamed of. Maybe this is something to be proud of. And when you can flick that switch from shame to pride, it makes such a difference. But it also makes a difference to other people, because you're confident and happy in who you are. A, everyone wants to have you around. So, yeah. You know, we get invited to all sorts of things. And B, I think it makes a difference to other women in similar situations, that they go, oh, my relationship has not just validity, but it can be celebrated. This is something everybody can actually enjoy.
Oh, Claire. Right, and so I need to ask you, what dog, Isle of Dogs, which is a brilliant book, and I found it, as I say, it's such a joyful, lovely read. And I learned so much about dogs, because there's nothing you don't know about dogs. Have you started, part of it is a journey towards you and Alice possibly thinking of what dog to get.
Yes.
Where are you and Alice on that?
Well, where we are is that we've bought a new house and we're basically going to knock it down and build so that we have the perfect house for and a protected space around it where the doors can be open.
Yes.
So consequently, either puppy or, you know, new young dog or whatever can get out all the time and the cats won't get either run over or kidnapped. So that's the we're changing our whole life and moving away from this gorgeous area, but changing our whole life to suit the dog that will come in.
Because we should say you've got two cats, you and Alice. Mm. You've got Eric and...
We've got Button, who is the mother of Eric.
Oh, my
and
goodness.
Eric is very, very nervous. And I am slightly worried about Eric and how he will adapt. But as long as he's got somewhere he can go and hide, he'll be fine.
Good
name. You know, I think, you know, with little Raymond, he'd be fine. So I don't think he could be intimidated by Raymond.
What do you make of Raymond, Claire?
I think he's great. I think he's got a massive personality. I love him.
Do you know what I like about him? And this is something you say in the book, is your dog... It tells you a lot about the owner.
Yes.
And often there is something of the owner in it that the owner wants to reveal about themselves, I think. And what I like about Raymond is that he defies expectation, is that I think people look at him and think he's a slightly Paris Hilton, floofy, snappy. I think people make assumptions about him.
Mm.
And actually he's quite a thoughtful, zen, sensitive, introverted dog.
Are we self-projecting?
Yes, we are.
Okay, good. Just checking.
Oh, Claire, what are they?
Are they cockers or springers? Cockers, yeah. They're lovely, though, but my God, they've got muddy. Yeah. Yes, exactly. Look at this pup.
Oh, yeah.
This is Emily's dog. This is Raymond. He's actually a Shih Tzu, but he looks like he might have a little bit of, you know, bit of Griffon Bristlewire or something in him, doesn't he? He's a good boy. He's very funny, though. Right.
Lovely
thank
to
you.
Meet you. Come on, Claire. Let's walk you back to where you have to be.
I'm going
to
go down there and I'm going to go onto the thing.
And you're still doing crafts, Claire?
Oh, yes.
Oh, what a gig that is.
I love that.
Do
and
you?
Hopefully, I think Lost Dogs, Found Dogs, as we're calling it now, because as they realise that Lost Dogs Live with Claire Balding does in print look like Lost Dogs Live with Claire Balding, in which case they're not lost. So Channel 5, that is, and hope that'll come back in another form, about that way, next year. I say another form, we'll just make some tweaks, but essentially it'd be lovely to have a recurring series on dogs, because I love doing crafts, but that's 4 days a year, you know. I think there's space in the schedules for a bit more dog love and dog advice, and you know, come on Raymond, good boy, run. Oh yeah, look at him go. He looks like a little flying carpet, don't you? Yes.
It sounds like you are okay with enjoy. Do you have to sort of force yourself, like we were saying earlier, to enjoy the spoils of your career and not think, oh.
Yeah, I constantly feel guilty.
Do you?
Yeah, yeah. That's a good lad. He hasn't had a poo. Not that I saw. Did he have one earlier?
No, do you know what? He's a bit like you, Claire.
Well, <They're>... constipated.
Bear with me.
bear with you.
Bear with?
He doesn't want to do it in public. He doesn't want to, you know.
He's not a morning character.
Oh, right, I see.
So he doesn't... he doesn't like eating early.
Yes, Archie didn't wake up early. Archie, no, God, no. He didn't want to go for a walk early. No.
It's been a genuine pleasure.
Thank you.
And I love your book, Isle of Dogs, which is out now, isn't it? And I really recommend, if you love dogs, you'll love it. If you don't, you'll love it.
Raymond, are you going to get your own copy?
Mm-hmm. And Claire, we should leave you and let you go because you've got a busy day. Are you going to say goodbye to Raymond?
Yeah. Bye-bye, Raymond. There we go. Let's just take that off as well. Let's give you a bit of grooming. You're so sweet. You're going to be tired. Yes. Bye-bye.
Oh, bye-bye, Claire.
I really hope you enjoyed that episode of Walking the Dog. We'd love it if you subscribed and do join us next time on Walking the Dog, wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.